My name is Lisa Aponte Soto, and I am a PhD candidate at the University of Illinois in Chicago. And I'm going to be talking about strategies for diversifying senior leadership in the healthcare workforce. And this came about primarily because of my experiences in the workforce and also the various conversations and dialogues that would emerge in the places of work that I have been in. And so before I start, I want to say that I have no conflict of interest or financial or otherwise to disclose. And so the objectives for this presentation will be first to uncover some strategies, some action steps for diversifying the healthcare workforce from the entry level through senior leadership. Also to discuss some particular action steps for aspiring healthcare executives of color and to identify some sort of essential support systems for championing that leadership. So you often hear in the dialogues that I've engaged in, well, why does it matter? And this really speaks to why diversity matters. An unequal workforce, as we know, really leads to unequal treatment. The Institute of Medicine supported that in their 2002 report when they articulated that the gap of a diverse employee base really reflects, that's not reflective of service community, really is reflective or a significant factor contributing to health inequities. And so we see now that the underrepresentation of racial and ethnic groups in science, math, and engineering technology programs sort of entering into those early pipeline programs has an impact. And as we know, that there is the population shift, right, where the majority minorities are becoming majorities in particular communities. And we know this particularly with the Latino community, it being the fastest growing as of 2010, has grown by 43% in a projected growth over the next four decades of over 50%. Also with the African American community continuing to grow, the Native American community a little bit less so, but knowing that we need to really start developing minority talent to the executive level so that they can have and bring with them that cultural lens from their lived experiences that will have a more informed power with regards to decision making in the healthcare field as it impacts patients and others. And so this sort of kind of paints a picture with regards to the opportunities for growth with regards to Latinos, even though still rather underrepresented, as well as African Americans in some of the more entry level positions, which would be like physician assistants or nurses aides and dental hygienists, they're definitely much less represented at sort of the higher positions that would lead to more executive entry, like physicians, etc. And so, again, projecting sort of the industry growth, we see that the industry, as we know, it's going to continue to grow, and there's going to be so many more opportunities for employment. So we need to, bridge the gap. And so here, this is sort of the historical context when we talk about diversity with regards to equal opportunity, sort of. We were talking about access, right, in the 1950s and early 60s. And so that sort of just kind of gets the door open, as Wortherly would say. And that's basically your civil rights policy, the policy that anyone can apply and be fairly considered for a position. And then we have affirmative action sort of coming into play later. And that's more of the assistance stage of it. Where it's kind of getting you to and through the door, and the focus being more of now the workforce diversity being on appreciation. What's happening once you've gotten through the door? Is it a meaningful experience, or are you just sort of in a position where you're stagnant and not able to move upward and be able to really make a difference? Yeah. am. That's sort of what I just shared with you. And this is sort of an example of a diversity statement. This came from an actual academic medical center. And as you see, they typically would say that they emphasize diversity with regards to age, ancestry, color, disability, gender, etc., sexual orientation, race, and religion, and of course, kind of articulating that it would not be tolerated. And that's definitely one of those sort of first steps in terms of really creating that culture. And so as we have just mentioned, sort of the matching or meeting the industry gap, really making sure that we're bridging that gap so that the service community has their demands met with an equitable workforce. And so we need to also diversify senior leadership in order to be able to provide a voice of those lived experiences. And so I'm going to share today some information from an extensive literature review that includes meta-analyses from 65 independent samples, as well as some case studies, and also two one-time semi-structured interviews. One of the interviews was conducted with senior healthcare executives and coaches. These were all executives of color, and this was using a 9-item questionnaire. There was 8 of participants, and also graduate students that participated in a mentorship program. And this was added after I submitted the abstract, simply because I felt that it was, since we had the information available, that it was important to sort of give the piece of what students who have gone through a program like that feel that has been the most significant in terms of impacting their career. And some of these, of course, have completed their degrees. Some have completed actual terminal degrees and are in the workforce, so they had a lot of insight to share. So with regards to some of the findings, some of the disparities that arose is that the lack of visible and accessible role models at the senior levels of leadership really acts as a barrier for diversifying the executive management. Also, knowing that underrepresented groups, study after study, demonstrated that they generally earn less, have less potential for promotion, and experience less job satisfaction than their white male counterparts. Also, people of color are less likely to receive the coaching opportunity, sort of that mentoring opportunity, regardless of their level of education, professional experience, or willingness to relocate, which have been found to be facilitators for other individuals. And I'm not going to go through all of these, but because some of these were already kind of touched on, but just kind of to highlight some of the barriers that were identified from the interviews as well as from some of the literature. Difficulty obtaining mentors or sponsors, and I will highlight the difference between a mentor and a sponsor. You would find that the mentor relationship was defined as more of an enriching relationship. There's more of a personal one-on-one contact where the mentor really may be a friend, whereas the sponsor would be more of a coach, so to speak, an advocate. Lack of informal networking, not being given stretch goals or things that would help towards the development of career. Also, with regards to executive level, sort of feeling like you're being tracked into positions or work that related to your cultural background. And just to share an example from one of the interviewees, who was an executive, she mentioned that when she went to apply for this position, immediately the interviewer had mentioned another position that was open that related to health disparities. And she said to him, "Well, quite honestly, I'm applying for this position because I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in insurance and insurance policy, and that's what I want to do." She got the position, and even though she took the position, she was still being sort of coerced to sort of shift into that position, and she kept having to advocate for herself. And it was, you know, sort of quite frustrating. But that's sort of a very enlightening thing that was seen, you know, in the literature, and that's just an example. And also being viewed, that also speaks to being viewed as a representative for your racial ethnic groups, so maybe the impact. And sometimes not feel like you fit in. With regards to facilitators, as you're probably starting to hear, mentoring really came out as a critical element for advancement, the mentoring relationships. And also, racial and ethnic minorities are more likely to benefit from what was defined as both career and psychosocial mentoring, whereas the career-oriented was more of typically seen as a Euro-American male facilitator for advancement, and the psychosocial generally for women. For minorities, it was sort of a combination of both. And sort of the psychosocial sort of taps into the role modeling, feelings of acceptance, having a sense of confirmation, having that counseling and friendship that you would get from the mentoring aspect, and the career would be more of the whole sponsorship and sort of coaching aspect. And also the sense that Euro-American male executives can be really integral because of their positions or the prevalence of their more Euro-American males being in higher level positions, being able to provide or sort of pass the torch and provide that kind of mentoring and sponsorship. But I would like to add that some of the literature also notes that there really was no difference in terms of advancement, whether it was cross-gender or cross or same-sex mentoring. And so this was a formula for one of the interviewees that he defined for success for his Institute of Diversity at his organization. And he said that really it was networking plus mentorship times talent squared in terms of advancing minority leadership and diversifying the workforce. However, after reviewing the literature and looking at all of the information from all of the interviewees, we really know that, in my view, it's really mentorship squared. You come in with the talent, and of course there's some sense that, you know, you have to sort of work above and beyond to sort of prove that you have talent, so that's where his talent square piece came in. But if you're already at the door with the talent, you know, if you come to the door and you've gotten through the door, you have the talent, and you're, you know, capable and qualified. So it's really about that enriching mentorship relationship, that having that personalized communication, feeling valued, feeling respected, particularly with Latinos, where you would find what they call personalismo, which is personalism, having that view that you're looked at as just a valuable, integral member of the institution, and that you're sort of a member of the family. So mentorship is very valuable to them. And of course, networking and sponsorship. And this really speaks to what the students here felt were sort of core leadership competencies that they gained from the program. Not necessarily that these are articulated as part of the program, but they felt that these were the sort of the core elements from being in the program that facilitated their success in the program and thereafter. Knowledge and skill development, sort of having additional more one-on-one coaching and with regards to the advancing their skill set, having opportunities like being able to work with particular researchers or policy makers with regards to certain high-level projects and learning from them. Also, confidence and empowerment, feeling like with regards to the types of relationships that... Am I out of time? Okay, thank you. With regards to the types of relationships of the executives that they had been able to meet and connect with through the program, they felt that really boosted their confidence. One of the quotes from one of the students was, you know, just having that board member say to me that I'm the future of healthcare really made me feel like, you know, I was valued and seen in that way, and no one had ever told me that. So it's just sort of the whole boost in confidence and feeling empowered from, you know, a combination of those relationships as well as the skill set. Also, ownership and commitment. They felt that they had a greater sense of ownership in the program and wanting to continue to make sure that their program capacity and continue to grow, and also having that sort of sense of commitment of giving back to that or to the organization. And the socio-political acumen, they felt that, again, it sort of kind of comes together with the others, facilitated their relationships that they will continue to build and grow with regards to advancing their careers. Sort of the networking aspect, learning how to navigate difficult situations and things like that. And so sort of some of the action steps here, I will highlight a few. For aspiring executives, sort of those entering the field or sort of those that are looking to advance. Obtaining a graduate or terminal degree, pursuing postgraduate fellowships, and these again were our recommendations from the executives. Choosing positions or assignments that judiciously, sort of things that are going to lead you to your professional growth or for advancement, which we typically see that it's not always the case with professionals of color. Approaching influential executives to serve as mentors and coaches, and joining organizations can also facilitate sort of minority-based organizations or an organization in your field, so that it facilitates the mentoring process as well as the networking process. However, one thing that was highly emphasized was to develop a network within. That wasn't seen enough among professionals or aspiring professionals of color, that they may become too dependent on these external organizations and not be networking enough within to be able to build those relationships that would facilitate for them to enter those positions. And so some of the barriers we've already talked about, but with regards to sort of, if you're in a situation where someone is being interviewed, and in the process, this person is being reviewed or discussed, having the courage to speak up if the person is being racialized, for example, and discounting those myths and trying to focus on highlighting the person's qualifications and saying, well, you know, this person brings this or that to the table, can we move past it? And with regards to accountability, sort of building the infrastructure. I mentioned the diversity statement, but that's sort of not enough. As we saw sort of in terms of advancing leadership, you need more to continue moving the dialogue. I think one of the colleagues here today mentioned the importance of dialogue and the honest dialogue, sort of through cultural sensitivity training or other supportive systems that will allow for these conversations to emerge. And so, looking at diversity as sort of an investment, recruiting from diverse group of homegrown talent, whether it's within or going to the communities where you would see these or find more individuals of color. Granting professional development opportunities to promising employees and affording accessible access to visible mainstream opportunities. So as you've seen, it's really not a bottom-up or a top-down approach. It's sort of a mix of the two that really sort of makes this work in terms of developing the diverse workforce. It is really important to have that leadership buy-in, that support, to build that infrastructure, to sort of lead and carry that vision. But without that upward stream mobility of the cultivation of the diverse talent, it's going to fall short. And so this sort of shows that partnership pipeline, sort of working from the student level and partnerships with the community as well as professional organizations and professional executives and coaches that can mentor and sort of develop professionals of color at each step of the way.